According to the credits, The Flintstones is a Steven Spielrock presentation, but that gag and all the others in the film were cooked up by what may be the largest team of screenwriters in movie history, 35, most of whom sat around a table brainstorming with the guidance of the director, Brian Levant, whose previous claim to fame was the movie Beethoven. Film critic Stephen Schiff had a look at the results and has this review of The Flintstones.
In the late 50s, the animation team at Hanna-Barbera noticed a curious phenomenon. Their cartoon series, Huckleberry Hound and Yogi Bear, were hugely successful with kids, but they were also hugely successful with adults. So why not tap the adult market directly with an animated show aimed at them? The result was the first primetime cartoon sitcom in television history. It was called The Flintstones, and it debuted in 1960 as a kind of caveman version of The Honeymooners. Sure enough, adults watched. But will they this time? The movie version of The Flintstones will delight kids, no doubt about it. And I suppose grown-ups will have a mildly pleasant time for the first half hour or so. The look of the movie is purposely cartoony. The rocks look like papier-mâché, the dinosaurs look like rubber, the caveman outfits look like Dacron, and the whole thing comes across as a giant moving toy set. It's a big technological leap backward for the people who made all those realistic dinosaurs in Jurassic Park, but it's very shrewd. This way, when the kids barrel into the local toy store to check out the merchandising, they won't be buying some degraded version of what they saw on the big screen. They'll be able to buy something close to an exact miniature replica. In fact, exact replication seems to be the abiding concern here. John Goodman and Elizabeth Perkins as Fred and Wilma Flintstone, and Rick Moranis and Rosie O'Donnell as Barney and Betty Rubble, expend untold amounts of thespian talent trying to pass themselves off as four rather stiffly drawn cartoon characters. And for the most part, they succeed. Never for a moment do they seem more than two-dimensional. At its best, the movie's like some sort of Stone Age vaudeville act, as in this clothesline exchange between Betty and Wilma.
Wilma, how did you get rid of the ring around the collar?
I just started washing Fred's neck.
You know, Wilma, if Fred scores the highest on that test, you'll be able to hire someone to do your laundry for you.
If Fred scores the highest on that test, I'll have to hire someone to revive me.
Oh, it's true. Fred's no Albert Einstein, but you never know. He may surprise you.
Well, maybe. He has been studying day and night.
Oh, I know. I've never seen him so excited about something that you couldn't spread mayonnaise on.
That test they're talking about is the story's linchpin. If Fred passes it, he'll graduate from the Stone Yard at Slate Inc., where he works, to some high muckamuck position, which of course will get him in a heap of trouble. It's the sort of plot that the Simpsons TV show has used to good effect more than once, but this movie has none of the Simpsons' wit and invention. For a while, it's fun to see the garbage disposal that turns out to be a hungry wild boar, the lawnmower that turns out to be some sort of snapping lobster, the shower that turns out to be a mastodon spouting water through its trunk. And for a while, it's fun to hear all those puns about rocks and stones and boulders and pebbles. But since those are just about the only two kinds of jokes operating here, the fun wears thin. The Flintstones is just an hour and a half long. To this viewer, it felt only slightly shorter than the Mesozoic era.
Stephen Schiff is critic at large for The New Yorker.